Alcohol contributes to over 200 diseases and injury-related health conditions, including dependence, cirrhosis, cancer, and trauma. In those aged 15 to 50, it is the leading risk factor for premature death and disability. It increases the risk of cancers of the mouth, esophagus, pharynx, larynx, liver, and breast. But have you ever heard that moderate consumption of alcohol is associated with better health outcomes? So where's the tipping point? Stand by. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Hello, I'm Dr. Nerida. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. What are the benefits and who stands to gain from the moderate use of alcohol? What is moderate alcohol consumption anyway? And are there any disadvantages to drinking in moderation? From Hope Channel's program Unhooked, I want to introduce you to Lonnie, who was incapable of moderating his alcohol use.
Well, I've wrecked every single car I've ever had, and that's been quite a few. I've been incarcerated from coast to coast. I've been in and out of treatment centers all my life, from the age of 16 to now. 9 treatment centers in my life. I've had 13 DUIs. Pretty much hurt everybody that I came in contact with. I used them for my own selfish gain. I multiple relapses, you know, through them treatments. I didn't listen to what people were telling me. I say, okay, I'm going to give up alcohol, but I can smoke weed. I'm going to give up weed, but I can take pills. Never really giving up everything. Always hanging on to that little bit of something. And one day I came home from work, and my mom confronted me. And I went off on her. I threw her up against the wall, put my fist through the wall, and cussed her up and down. And her crying and looking in my eyes and saying, son, I see the devil in your eyes. And something that day hit me when she said that. After all the mess that I've been through and done, that hit me. And her, at the point of calling the police to get me out of her house, called my grandmother instead. And she coming over to the house and talking me down. And sitting on the front porch of her house, she's saying, son, do you want help? And I said, yes, ma'am, I do. And she says, well, the only person that can help you is Jesus. And I thought to myself, yeah, I've tried everything else out there, because at that point I've tried every treatment center or every treatment they offer, psychiatrists, jails, nothing was working. I've tried everything but God. And I said, yeah, I would like to try. So she contacted Drug Alternative Program and put me in touch with Cliff and Freddie Harris, which are the directors of the program. And I did a phone interview. He accepted me over the phone. He says, if you want to get here, you need to come right now. At the time, the program was 12 months. I was ready for help, but I knew nothing about God. The first morning I was here, I was hungover, and they were having worship in the house, and they asked me to pray out loud. I thought I was going to die. I never barely prayed myself, let alone pray out loud in front of 12 people. But I did it, and I survived.
He certainly did survive. On today's show, we have two great experts, a sumptuous soup, a demo, but first, the news. In the headlines today, moderate drinking linked to cancer, no benefit to alcohol for the poor, and alcohol plus distraction doubles driving accidents. Moderate drinking can increase the risk of certain cancers, according to a new study out of Harvard University. Light to moderate drinking was associated with an increased risk of breast cancer in women and several other cancers in men who smoke. For women, drinking just one drink a day was sufficient to increase their cancer risk. The researchers estimated that drinking alcohol causes almost 4% of all cancers worldwide and a similar proportion of cancer deaths in the US, which could mean that nearly 25,000 Americans will die of alcohol-related cancer this year. That begs the question as to whether light to moderate alcohol consumption is really good for your health. Alcohol consumption in poorer countries conveys no apparent benefits and is reported to be the third most important modifiable risk factor for death and disability worldwide. These are the findings of the prospective urban-rural epidemiological study, which was published in The Lancet recently. Researchers found no advantage to alcohol consumption in low, middle and low income countries. In fact, current drinkers there are 40% more likely to experience injury, heart disease, stroke, cancer and death. Across 12 low to high income countries, there was a 50% increased risk of alcohol related cancers and a 30% increased risk of injury in current drinkers compared with never drinkers. So if you don't drink, please don't start. A little alcohol coupled with distraction while driving can double the risk of a road traffic accident. Even when alcohol levels were below the legal limits for drunk driving, researchers found that in simulated driving conditions, the chance of impaired safe driving went up twofold when a driver had to deal with a distraction while driving. When we're driving, distractions might include a text message, changing a radio station, or dealing with a dashboard control. With one alcohol-related traffic death in America every hour, if you don't do drink, please don't drive. I'm Dr. Nerida McKibben, and that's today's health news. Joining us in the studio today is Dr. David Williams, Professor of Public Health and of Sociology at Harvard University, and Dr. Peter Landless, Executive Director of the International Commission for Prevention of Alcoholism and Drug Dependency. I asked Dr. Williams about the age at which young people are beginning to drink and if there's any danger associated with the age of initiation.
So it certainly varies by culture and it varies in families, but a very disturbing trend is children beginning to drink at younger and younger ages, even under the age of 10. Parents are giving their child a sip of an alcoholic beverage, and so that by, in the United States, middle school, high school, a lot of children are drinking. The evidence is, scientific evidence is overwhelming and clear. The earlier children begin drinking, the worse are all of the negative effects of alcohol, the more likely they are to have alcohol problems mm-hmm. down the road and to have negative health consequences of it. So really keeping alcohol away from children is actually a very important public health strategy for the nation.
Now, Dr. Landless, in our previous show, we said that we heard that one in three adults has an alcohol use disorder. How common is it amongst young adults? And just let's run through the consequences of that again.
When you talk about alcohol use disorder in young people, the number of people who are binge drinking is rising by the day, as it were. And does one regard that as an alcohol use problem? Absolutely one does. I mean, it's doubled in the last 5 to 10 years without any question. And so it's increasing. Just to re-emphasize a point that Dr. Williams made so importantly, the earlier people begin to drink, each of us has the possibility of becoming alcohol dependent. If there's a first degree relative, that increases more. But when there is an additional factor of the early drinking below the age of 15, when the alcohol debut takes place, the rate increases astronomically. We get to percentages over 50%. So when you look at the percentage of young people, I don't think we have an understanding yet, but when you see that one in three adults is having the problem, they came from being young people at one point. So you could, I think, extrapolate that the problem goes back to...
Yeah. It's more than 50% of young people, much more than 50% of young people that are involved in regular binge drinking. That's drinking five or more drinks on one occasion.
To get drunk.
And that technically is not an alcohol use disorder, because that's DSM-5 criteria is to define use disorder. But that is a pattern. It's a trajectory towards alcohol problems.
Great.
Right. So we're talking here about unhealthful use
Absolutely.
Of alcohol. Perhaps not by the definition. Now, Dr. Landless, you mentioned family history. We haven't discussed the genetics. Tell us about the genetics of dependence, especially with alcohol.
You take 100 people who have never had alcohol and expose them to alcohol. The chances of an individual becoming dependent are probably 7% of that. So 7 out of 100 could become an alcohol abuser. Then if you add to that the fact that there's a first-degree relative, now we're bringing in the genetics. So the first exposure in at random point would be about 7%. If there's a first-degree relative, this doubles. So the first-degree relative, mother, father, grandfather, grandmother, first aunt, uncle, those are first-degree relatives. It doubles to about 14%. You then bring the age of debut to the early teens. The younger you bring that to, you then start having a trajectory around about 40 to 50%, 50%. So you see this huge increase. Now, there has to be some genetic component to it because of the relatives being invoked. However, there's also the impressionable. Is this nature alone? It's nurture as well. What was mentioned earlier by Dr. Williams is that children watch, they see the model, they're impressionable. We all are. And that is part of the component of whether one becomes an abuser of alcohol or not.
A combination of inherited and cultivated tendencies. After the break, you'll find us in the kitchen. But first, this. Oh, hi, honey. Thanks for doing the shopping.
Oh, you're welcome. Is this a good kind of bread?
I don't know. What's in it? What's on the ingredient list?
Well, why does that matter?
Well, there are chemicals in our foods that I prefer not to eat.
Oh, really? Like what?
Like aspartame. It's in 6,000 items on our shelves. 200 million people eat it every day. It's a sweetener.
Oh, I love sweets. Give me some aspartame.
Well, you might not want it when you hear that some people think it causes headaches and tremors. Some people even think it causes brain tumors.
Ooh, yuck. So how do you tell if it's good or not?
Tell us what's in the bread.
Oh, well, let's see. The first ingredient is whole wheat flour.
Oh, that sounds good.
And then we have yeast, gluten, oil, honey.
Well, that all sounds great.
And then we have azodicarbonamide. You have to be a chemist to read this one.
If God made it, eat it.
If man made it, read it.
And if you can't read it, don't eat it. Doctor's orders. Welcome back. I'm in the kitchen with Phil today. Phil, what are we making? It smells great. It
smells great. It looks great. It's going to taste great. I love squash and pumpkin. Those vegetables or fruits any time of year. So we're going to put together a squash pumpkin soup.
Wonderful.
Okay, so for this recipe, it's a little bit involved. We have 2 small pumpkins or squash, 2 shallots, 3 cloves of garlic, 1 inch of ginger, 2 cups of veggie stock, 1 cup of coconut milk or another non-dairy milk, 2 tablespoons of maple syrup or agave nectar, and 1/4 teaspoon of sea salt, cinnamon, and nutmeg. We're also gonna make a topping, and this is a garlic kale sesame topping. So we need 1 cup of roughly chopped kale, 1 large garlic clove, 2 tablespoons of raw sesame seeds, and 1 tablespoon of olive oil, just a pinch of salt.
Wow.
So this is very involved, but this is gonna be delicious, really wow your guests.
Yes, I love those dark greens with the bright oranges too. Make
Absolutely.
Lovely colors. So I'm looking forward to how this is going to look.
So you're going to start off with the soup. I'm going to start off with the topping.
All right.
And I'm going to start putting these sesame seeds in here and getting them a little bit toasted.
Now, one of my favorite
of the squash pumpkin is that this acorn, this dark green color. And so what you do with this is we're going to sort of do half and half, just so we can show you. So you take the top off and then split it in half. And if you can't get through it, sometimes it's easier just to pop it in the oven first, whole for 5-10 minutes. It just softens it enough you can get through it. Though I guess men don't probably have that problem. So once you've done that, then you want to just brush it with a little oil. And then inside as well, once you've taken the seeds and everything out, and then pop it face down on your baking tray, and you're going to bake that at 350 degrees for about 45 minutes. So that goes in the oven just like that. Just going to pop them there. Once that comes out of the oven, it's nice and soft, and you can start to chop it up because now it doesn't need to be really fine. Peel it while it's hot. Give it about 10 minutes to cool, and then peel it while it's nice and warm and soft. It makes it easier for you.
I've finished the sesame seeds. They're toasted, they're not burnt. And what I'm going to do is saute the garlic a little bit. So now that we've got this going, we're going to throw in our kale. I'm going to mix that up around a little bit.
And while you're doing that, I'll just get that onion is nice and transparent. Your garlic pieces are soft. Ginger, you can either grate an inch of grated ginger, or you can get it already crushed, already grated in the tube. That keeps really nicely in the refrigerator, and it's always on hand. And if you don't want to do the whole pumpkin deal, you can actually cheat and grab yourself a can of pumpkin, and you'd put probably two and a half cups. On a large can like that would be 3 cups. So you can just add it to flavor. But 2.5 to 3 cups would be just fine. So we'll mix that in with all the other ingredients now. This is light milk, so this is a reduced fat milk. Pop in a little sweetener there to bring out the flavor, pop in our spices, salt, and that is ready to whiz up. So we can whiz that with our...
Well, it's great if you have an emulsion blender just like this. Yes. You can just stick it in. You can also use a regular blender. It can get a little bit messier, so you have to be a little bit more careful.
Right.
But this is a very easy, terrific way to do it.
Yeah, so I'm just
a little bit worried now.
Yeah, right.
And I actually like to just mix it up a little bit, but I also like a little bit of chunkiness.
Right.
Which gives it a little bit more body and a little bit more texture.
All right, so we get that finished later, but you've got yours ready now.
This is all ready, so I'm going to top this, and this is what gives it the wow factor. So your guests, if you have them over, they're going to see the colors,
just
and they're just
going
to be wowed by it.
Wow, that is beautiful. Very impressive.
You ready to try it?
Oh, I am. I am. I love the sweetness of the soup, the crunch of the sesame, and that kale. What a wonderful combo.
Absolutely, and the different flavors just bring out the flavors of the squash and the pumpkin. It's great.
Beautiful. Thanks, Phil. You've got to try it. Nice. Now, when Lonnie's mum confronted him about his alcoholism, he assaulted her. However, she had the presence of mind to do something different and called his grandmother instead of the police. And his grandmother offered him something he had never tried before, a Christian rehab program, and he accepted.
I embraced the program. It gave me discipline, structure, which pretty much I'd never had in my life. I was happy. You know, even though I had to go through dealing with the pain of all the stuff that I had done in my life, after I dealt with that, I felt free. I felt a burden lifted. And I had a whole year clean, and that was just unheard of. it was all new to me. And that, and I had God in my life, and that was all new to me. You know, I graduated in 2000. And started working for the program. And I was lawn crew supervisor and house manager. And for about 2 years, throughout this time, I injured my back. I had a bulging disc, and it was causing me a lot of pain. And I knew that I shouldn't mess around with it, but I did it anyway, and I started taking pain medication. And that's where my downfall went. God took a back seat. I was playing the game, playing the Christian, looking good on the outside, but not on the inside. I had three doctors going at one time, getting prescriptions from them. I knew how to play the game. I'd done it for so many years, I knew what to do. I worked my way up to assistant director of the program. So, you know, I got off work one Friday and went straight to the liquor store, got me a fifth of Jack Daniels, went and got a porno, a pack of cigarettes, and a 12-pack of beer, and went home and proceeded to get wasted. And, you know, I'm here to tell y'all, you know, once you relapse, it gets 10 times worse. I mean, you not only go back to where you left off when you got clean, but it's 10 times worse. But that day I did that, I decided to call Cliff and Freddie up, Mr. and Mrs. Harris, drunk. I don't know what made me do it. It's just the guilt because at that time I was using pills probably for almost a year and still working here. Then he says, well, I can't keep you on. Give me your keys and the credit cards. So that devastated me. Somebody actively using can't work for a drug program, you know. So I hit the streets of San Bernardino, started using methamphetamines real heavy, started intravenously shooting it. Went down fast with that. That's a pretty horrific drug. It sucked the life right out of me. I'm staying up weeks at a time. Got put in the county psychiatric ward 4 times because I was out of my head. I lost 70 pounds in 3 months. Got put in jail again, possession, assault on a police officer, DUIs. Sitting in the jail cell there, I knew where I needed to get back to, and I wrote Mr. and Mrs. Harris a letter and just asking if they could please take me back when I got out. I knew that's where I needed to be because that's where I found a life before. That's where I found the discipline. That's where I found the structure. And that's where I knew that there would be people who were godly that would show me the example that I needed.
Knowing you need it is half the battle. Now back to Dr. Peter Landless and Dr. David Williams. I asked Dr. Landless to give us some history about the association between alcohol use and health benefits.
Probably in 1979, an individual called Reynaud talked about the French paradox, looking at individuals in France who were eating all kinds of unhealthy, fat-laden foods, but were having a lower incidence of coronary artery events or heart attacks in that particular group. And so they thought, well, maybe this is related to the consumption of red wine, which the French in that area were taking. And so Reynaud wrote and published in a very prestigious medical journal about the French paradox, and it took off from there. Many papers written, many studies have been done. This has been re-looked at over the last 10 years very specifically, and what has been found is that there are many confounding variables which were initially not taken into account.
So, Dr. Williams, we're talking about 35 years since this finding. Have there been studies done looking forward? I mean, we can look at populations and go, well, this and that. Are there prospective studies done on this?
There are more than 100 prospective studies that show, on average, people who consume alcohol moderately have lower risk of cardiovascular disease and lower overall mortality risk than people in any of the other drinking categories. Certainly, they do better than those who are heavy drinkers, but for our conversation, these studies suggest they do better than those who are non-drinkers. Mm-hmm. And that has raised the level, and the alcohol industry has been happy to promote it, that moderate alcohol consumption is therefore good for your health.
And they must have been singing and dancing when that news came out.
Yes, and if you listen to the news, there's always another study that shows alcohol, moderate alcohol consumption protects against this disease and that disease, and it's good for this and good for that. So, like we said, there are a range of studies now that showed this to be true for a broad range of conditions. In fact, one of the intriguing things is one recent scientific paper was saying, what is the underlying causal mechanism? Because how could this, it has to be a magic bullet. That is, it's having positive effects on such a broad range of diseases where the underlying risk factors are so very different.
You've just said that there's an association between moderate alcohol use and positive health benefits. But when we're reading research, sometimes we say something causes this, but most often we see this is associated with that. Tell us the difference between causation and association.
It's a great question. It's a central issue in research, and it's really important to understanding the evidence about alcohol and health. Yes, there are studies that show moderate alcohol consumption is associated with good health, but none of these studies suggest, and in fact, a lot of evidence suggests, that moderate alcohol consumption is not the cause of good health. Let me give a concrete example of a fancy term we called in scientific research, confounding. And that is when we conclude that A caused B when A did not cause B. A is associated with B. So give you a practical example. If I did a research study, and I did it in every country of the world, and looked at is there a relationship between people who travel with a packet of matches and lung cancer, in every country I did this, I would find that women who carry matches in their purse or men who walk with a packet of matches in their pocket are much more likely to die of lung cancer. The question is carrying matches causing people to die of lung cancer? No, but it is related to something else, cigarette smoking, that really is the cause of lung cancer. That's an example of where the association between matches and lung cancer is not a causal one. So what we now know from the scientific research, that in general, people who drink moderately are different in ways that have nothing to do with alcohol from people who tend not to drink. And that it's the other factors that these moderate drinkers have, many of them practice moderation in other areas of their life. They tend to exercise more regularly, see their doctor more regularly, have better nutrition on average than people who don't drink at all.
So tell us, what are the benefits, apparent benefits, that we're being told all the time, that alcohol gives? What are the diseases that moderate or light drinking seems to be associated with better what?
Well, the studies that are being addressed and spoken about by Dr. Williams talk about one of the most important ones that has hit the headlines so often, and that is related to coronary artery disease. There have been many studies, as he's mentioned, saying that people who have low or moderate intakes of alcohol have less coronary artery disease incidence, angina, heart attacks, and that kind of issue. However, what is interestingly happening is that as more and more evidence is being looked at, it's becoming more obvious that it's a very particular set of patients or individuals who have this benefit. As has been mentioned, there are confounding variables. There are other things, diabetes. There are studies which show that there's a decreased incidence of type 2 diabetes in people who use moderate alcohol. It's even been alluded to the thought that there may be a lower incidence of Alzheimer's. So we're looking at a number of reports which are looking at the association and not necessarily being able to show the causal relationship. But those are some of the examples that you've asked for. And I think we need to be very open and say that those will be found in the literature. As to whether or not causality has been proven, that's a whole other story.
And we'll talk more about the whole other story after the break. But first, consider this. Wine is mentioned many times in the Bible. Sometimes it refers to alcohol, and other times it refers to fresh grape juice. If we look at the context, we can usually tell the difference. For example, in Leviticus 10, priests were told, "Do not drink wine or intoxicating drink when you go into the tabernacle." In other words, they could not be drunk in God's presence. However, they regularly received the offerings of grain, oil, and wine that people brought to the temple. So was the wine fermented or unfermented? Well, in another place, it's referred to as new wine, meaning fresh, unfermented grape juice. At the Last Supper, Jesus broke the bread and said it would represent his broken body. Then he passed the wine, saying it would represent his blood, shed for our sins. Now, do you think it was unfermented grape juice or fermented wine? In Matthew 26:29, he tells his disciples that this is the last time they would drink the fruit of the vine together until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. So it was fresh juice, and besides, a fermented drink could hardly represent the perfect sacrifice that Jesus paid to redeem us. 1 Corinthians 6:20 reminds us that since our freedom was purchased at such great cost, we should glorify God in our bodies, which includes avoiding the use of alcohol. Welcome back. Today we're talking about moderate drinking, which for women is one standard drink a day, and for men under 65, that would be two standard drinks a day. However, for men over 65, it's one drink a day. So what's a standard drink? Well, that depends on which country you're in. In New Zealand or Ireland, a standard drink contains 10 grams of alcohol. In Britain, it's 8 grams of alcohol. In America, 14 grams, which is almost twice as much as the British standard. Now, what constitutes a standard drink also depends on what you're drinking. So let's start over here with beer. Beer is, if it's 5% alcohol by volume, or ABV is what you might see on the label, then it's a 12 ounce or 350 ml standard pour. But beer can range from 4% to 8% alcohol by volume. So if we were to look at a pint of light beer, which would be 4%, it contains the alcohol equivalent of 2.3 standard American drinks. A pint of regular 5% beer would be equivalent to about 3 standard drinks. And that's heavy drinking for a man. A pint like this of 8% extra strong lager is equivalent to 4.5 standard drinks. Now if we move up the scale, an Alcopop is a sweet, fizzy alcoholic drink that has 3 to 7% alcohol by volume. The taste of the alcohol is being masked by sweet soda, and these drinks are designed to attract the younger drinker. In fact, some people refer to them as a gateway drink because they introduce young people to alcohol. Now, if they're 5% alcohol by volume, then 12 ounces or 350 mils is one standard drink, and that's these sizes. But if they're a 7% alcohol by volume, then 8 ounces or 250 mils is one standard drink. Let's move across to the wine. Wine is more popular among older drinkers. Though if you look across Americans in general, people are equally divided between beer and wine. If this wine were to be 12% alcohol by volume, then a 5-ounce pour, or 150 mils, is one standard drink. And that's what we're looking at here. Now, wine is typically between 11% and 13% alcohol by volume, but not all producers are required to put that on the label. So, like this wine here, there's no recording on the label, so you would have to investigate. You might go online, you might even have to ring the company to find out if their alcohol is 11, 12 or 13% in their wine. So let's say it's a 13% wine. With an 8-ounce pour, it's right at the upper limit for moderate consumption for men. And by the way, there are 5 standard drinks in a bottle of wine in the US. And remember, if you're in the UK, a 750ml bottle contains more than 9 standard drinks. Now let's come across to spirits. Spirits are 40% alcohol by volume. That's known as 80 proof. So a 1.5 ounce or a 45ml pour is a standard drink, and that's what our shot bottle is here. Now in Britain, that would be a 1 ounce pour. When it comes to spirits like whiskey, gin, vodka, rum, brandy, cognac, tequila, we find that they range between 40 and 60% alcohol. So if it's a 40%, a 1.5 ounce pour is equivalent to 1 standard drink. Now if we pour that in, that's not very much by volume. And if you're drinking at a bar, beware, because they usually serve doubles, and that's 2 standard drinks. Now, I cannot recommend alcohol use. After all, you wouldn't reach into your bathroom cupboard and drink this if it was drinking alcohol. But if you choose to drink, be sure to know how much alcohol is in your drink of choice and know how much you pour, because studies have shown people pour up to 50% more than they think they're pouring. Find out why in our next demonstration in this series.
Are you looking for more peace in your life and a better night's sleep? Making changes in your diet and exercise patterns could be the answer. Recently, researchers questioned 2,600 people who had participated in a lifestyle program that focused on healthy food choices and increasing physical exercise. Just 4 weeks later, more than half of these individuals reported sleeping more deeply, feeling less stressed, enjoying emotional stability, and having less fear and depression. A change in lifestyle will improve your well-being, and that's another ageless advantage.
Now it's time for your questions. Someone called and said, "When I'm stressed, I can't help but eat a lot, and I've been stressed for some time now. What can I do?" Well, the best coping mechanism for stress is actually exercise. It's sort of the opposite of eating. So instead of eating, go for a 5-minute brisk walk outdoors. And if that's not possible, then just get down, do some push-ups, sit-ups, some squats. Do 1 minute each of those, and within 3 minutes, that craving for food will probably have passed. While you're working out, reflect on why you are stressed and consider how you could think about that situation in a different way that will cause you less stress. Every morning, I'd encourage you to meditate for 30 to 60 minutes. That's going to help set you up for a stress-less day. Someone else called, "I'm a diabetic. What's the best sugar to use in my diet? Some say dark sugar is better than white sugar. Others say it's sweeteners. Could you please clarify this?" Well, sugar is not the best for you as a diabetic. You really should be eliminating it from your diet, and most of us should as well. Whether it's white, dark, sugar is still sugar. And that's not just for diabetics, that's for all of us. Sugar is sugar, no matter which way we get it. You know, it's better to try to replace sugar in recipes with whole fruit, like a mashed banana or applesauce, because if it's a sweet dish, it can take fruit. You can replace the egg and the sugar at the same time with those things, and sometimes even the fat. Or you can use a no-calorie natural sweetener like stevia, which is the dried leaf of a bush. You can also use erythritol or xylitol. I don't recommend what we call artificial sweeteners, because they can drive our taste buds to crave really sweet things. Stevia can do the same, so just watch how much you use. Someone else emailed, "What can I do for hemorrhoids? I don't want surgery." Well, a diet rich in fruit, veggies, whole grains will all help to reduce the symptoms. It won't happen overnight. It will take maybe a few weeks, maybe even a month. Now, you can settle the inflammation quite quickly by inserting a medicated suppository or even a fresh peeled garlic clove once a day until the irritation settles. Thanks for those questions. I love to hear from you. Remember, you can Facebook, text, email, phone those questions in. Now, let's go shopping. Limes come in 2 main types, Tahitian and Mexican. The true lime is the Mexican lime. Native to Malaysia, it arrived in Florida in the early 1900s and became a popular crop in Florida Key. Thus its other name, Key Lime. And now you're probably thinking of Key Lime Pie, which is a delicious way to use them. Limes are loaded with vitamin C. The British Merchant Navy knew that, and they gave limes to their sailors to prevent scurvy. In fact, they ate so many limes, they were called limeys. Limes are often used to accent the flavour of foods and beverages. So try a twist of lime in your water this summer, or squeeze it on your salads for a tasty salad. Bon appetit. Today we're talking to Dr. Peter Landless, cardiologist, and Dr. David Williams, Harvard Professor of Sociology and Public Health, about the association between the moderate use of alcohol and the health benefits with respect to heart disease, diabetes, and even Alzheimer's disease. I asked Dr. Landless to give us the scientific explanation for these findings.
Well, probably what was very exciting, particularly to the cardiological fraternity, was looking at a decreased incidence of coronary artery disease. What are the mechanisms? Well, it has been shown in certain individuals that low dose of alcohol increases the high-density lipoprotein, cholesterol, the good or healthy cholesterol. There's also been evidence to show that there's a decreased amount of clotting which takes place. Clotting is a very essential component to having a heart attack. You don't have a heart attack or a stroke unless there's an increased clotting mechanism. That has also been shown to be decreased in people who take low doses of alcohol.
And the diabetes?
The diabetes is a more vexed question as to understanding the mechanism. I'm not sure that there is a well-understood mechanism, apart from part of the temperate behavior that Dr. Williams alluded to earlier. Mm. That
I think there's a question about maybe making people more sensitive to insulin.
There may be a sensitivity to
but
insulin.
But I'm thinking that to raise my HDL, I just need to go do some exercise.
But it's so much more difficult to do that because, you see, you have to put on your shoes and get out and do that. Mm. Whereas you can sit in front of the TV, you know, as according to the advertisements and so on. And at the same time, and here's where the arguments begin to break down. When you talk about the kind of people that have been studied to show a benefit, those are people who are getting out and doing their exercise as well as taking a small amount of alcohol. To the individual who sits and becomes the couch potato, taking the alcohol, watching the television, eating the snacks all the time, those are the people who put up their triglycerides, put up their weight, have an increased amount of diabetes. So you're looking at different populations.
I think it's also important to mention that in spite of the positive benefits, they always have to be taken into account in terms of the negative benefits. If alcohol were a newly invented drug, the Food and Drug Administration of the United States would not approve it for use because although it has some positive benefits, the negative benefits far outweigh the positive benefits. And that's a point that cannot be overemphasized.
Right. So we need to look at that. Stand back and look at that. Whole picture, the big picture.
You know, we so often trawl these waters, and they're shark-infested waters, addiction, accidents, domestic violence, all of the things we've talked about, for some of these sardines of evidence of some benefit. Again, we need to look at the big picture as to what this whole culture is leading to with the use of alcohol and to the benefits, so-called, that accrue.
Can I give two examples of the big picture just to build on Dr. Landis's point? The World Health Organization report, this latest report on alcohol said, alcohol is the number one cause of death in the world among men aged 15 to 59, the number one cause of death. The Lancet, a major British medical journal, concluded in a study published a few years ago that alcohol was the world's most dangerous drug, having more negative effects than any other drug, including cocaine and heroin and crack. Alcohol is number one, worse than even tobacco. So, I mean, the evidence is clear. This is not a good thing for health.
But people just hang on this moderate use of alcohol. Can we say, can I just ask you, the non-drinkers, because this is all relating your moderate or your light drinker with your non-drinker, are non-drinkers all the same? Is
no,
being a non-drinker equal?
No, they're not at all. And in fact, you raise an excellent point.
Exactly.
Because looking at some of the studies that have been done, where they were comparing drinkers and non-drinkers, reanalysis of the studies and of the individuals in those studies has shown that in the non-drinking group, there was more tendency to pathology related to diabetes. There were more people overweight. There was a lower socioeconomic stratum that was studied in that group. They had less health insurance, and they were of a lower educational level. So here you're seeing immediately a whole number of very crucial factors that have been initially ignored, and a number of people who were regarded as non-drinkers had previously been drinkers.
Exactly.
And they were now included as non-drinkers, but they were previous drinkers.
So perhaps they had had problems with
exactly.
alcohol.
Exactly.
And because of problems with alcohol, they have stopped drinking. And then when they've done the analyses, and so Dr. Landis is so correct, and so that even when you look at all of the scientific evidence, it shows when you correctly classify drinkers, there is no benefit of moderate drinking. So part of the associations were found were due to faulty scientific methods. And I'm not saying people deliberately did them, but correctly doing the analyses shows there is no benefit.
And so only the positive results are being really touted.
Sure.
This negative result, I had not heard about before.
Sure. Well, the important point, what is touted is not happening accidentally. The alcohol industry makes much of its profits by young people using alcohol in very dangerous ways. And they are constantly trying to keep a message of the positive benefits of alcohol. And just to repeat the point Dr. Landless said, even when studies have found an association, those associations, which we have shown to be problematic, have only been found in middle-aged adults. There is not one shred of scientific evidence that shows any benefit for even moderate alcohol consumption among persons under the age of 40. And that is the group that misuses alcohol, and we get these positive associations touted all the time, when if you look at all of the evidence, there is no benefit.
So no benefit and only harm in the under 40s. Fascinating. Stick around, we have more from the experts after the break. And we're back. Lonnie had struggled with alcohol addiction all of his life. Then he tried a Christian program and for the first time achieved sobriety. But he hurt his back, started on pain meds, and quickly became addicted. He relapsed worse than ever before and ended up in jail. He knew what he had to do. So from his jail cell, he wrote a letter asking if that rehab center could take him back. See what happens next.
So they accepted me back into the program, and I was worried people weren't going to accept me, but they did. Everybody was glad to see me and welcomed me back, and that was a blessing in itself. That really started out this was my second time here on a good note, because it was tough coming back here. It wasn't easy, because I knew what I was going to have to face and what I did to those who cared about me. This time it was more heart work, working on my heart, and getting a relationship with Jesus and learning scripture. Mr. Harris decided, the program now is 12 to 18 months, and he decided to keep me 23 months. And I told him, I said, whatever you think, I'm here to listen, and whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. Because I got to get it right this time. I don't have much time left. At that time, well, I turned 30 in the program and I turned 40 in the program. So I came back 10 years later and went through it again. I had almost a little over 4 years clean when I relapsed. I graduated in 2007. So I got 5 years clean now. So I've surpassed the other one. You may stay clean for a short period of time on your own, but until you accept God into your life and embrace Him and to accept that you're not in control, that God is, you're not going to stay clean. That's my experience. You know, I'm sitting here today because people didn't give up on me and they continued to pray for me. I'm not saying to enable them and bail them out and pay their bills and pay their fines and give them a place to live and all of that, because all that does is just keep them in their mess. But prayer works, because I'm sitting here talking to you today because my grandmother didn't give up on me, my mother didn't give up on me, And even though I put them through hell on earth, they kept praying for me.
So mothers, grandmothers, never give up. Before the break, we learned from Dr. Peter Landless and Dr. David Williams that there's no benefit to moderate drinking in the under 40s. I asked Dr. Landless if there are any benefits seen in seniors who drink moderately.
Yes, there is a problem in the seniors. In over 65-year-olds, just in the last 2 weeks, there's been an interesting study come out showing an increased rate of cardiac events of all kinds, cardiac failure, myocardial infarction or heart attacks, in individuals taking moderate amounts of alcohol over the age of 65. So here we're seeing below 40, no benefits. Above 65, you're starting to see increased events and problems. So, yeah, it is a danger to those who get older. So we're looking at a dangerous substance which is licensed and legal.
And so someone between the age of 40 and 65, even those waters are muddied by the wrong comparisons and the studies and the wrong conclusions being drawn.
Absolutely.
So, Dr. Williams, are there dangers to moderate alcohol
Yes.
use and light alcohol?
And that is, it's not only the methodological issues with the problem with the studies, but also there's a lot of scientific evidence that is not given much airtime that moderate alcohol consumption has a broad range of negative effects. For example, alcohol is a known carcinogen. That's a fancy word that means it causes cancer. Most women don't know that one drink of alcohol increases a woman's risk of breast cancer, for example. And moderate alcohol consumption is linked to a broad range of cancers, is a major source of accidents and injuries in our society, and is linked to a broad range of diseases. There is one really, really important point we need to make about moderate alcohol consumption, and for me is the most important reason for a Christian to think about, is that moderate alcohol consumption changes your ability to think straight. Your sense of judgment and making right decisions is impaired by moderate alcohol consumption. And for me, for the Christian, that is the single most important reason. Our eternal destiny depends on the choices we make and our ability to communicate with the power of the Holy Spirit to say, this is the way, walk in it. And any habit, any practice that changes our ability to be fully in control of our cognitive capacities is a bad thing for us.
Okay. Now, Dr. Landless, the Bible talks a lot about wine. What's it talking about then?
When it talks about, you know, take a little wine for your stomach's sake, you know, Paul was talking to Timothy, was probably referring to a diluted sort of vinegar, which may have had a little bit of alcohol in it. But he wasn't speaking on a principle, a God-guided principle related to salvation. Solomon talks about the detrimental effects of alcohol and looking at the wine when it is red and about the drunkard. We see referrals to many situations of the negative components of alcohol in the Bible. But I think we come back to the most cogent and important aspect of alcohol in the Christian's life. How does it affect my choices? How does it affect my relationship? And the bottom line is, the reason that we don't use it is a spiritual one. Excuse the pun intended, but it's important. Mm. It's a spiritual one.
And for the theologically oriented, I would mention that in the Greek, the New Testament, the same word is used for fermented or unfermented grape juice.
Right.
The same word. There isn't a distinction. In Hebrew there is, in Greek there isn't. So then we have to...
And the New Testament has been written in Greek.
Correct.
So, yeah.
And so that we have to make a decision based on broader principles. And the broader principle is that the Bible is clear, our bodies are the temple of the Holy Spirit. And the New Testament also clearly tells us, be sober, be vigilant, because our adversary, the devil, is as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may defile.
Yeah, and I think in the Bible you see examples of men, godly men who got into trouble using alcohol.
Absolutely.
There was Noah. Poor old Noah.
There was Lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the mistakes that were made there were exposed. I believe those stories have been put there
exactly.
for our admonition.
For our examples.
And what's exactly. interesting is I've always been interested by Samson's story, where he was brought up with the Nazarite vow. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if either of you wants to explain the Nazarite vow, but Nazir means to set aside for holy use, to be right. consecrated. And in the New Testament, as a New Testament believer, Peter talks about us being a royal priesthood, doesn't
Correct.
He?
Correct. And he urges us to be temperate. Temperance means avoidance of all things harmful and the wise use of those things good.
And what we've learned so far is that the wise use of all things good does not seem to include the ingestion of alcohol, since binging and addiction are such significant problems to so many. The apparent benefits of moderate alcohol use seem to be more about differences in the lifestyles of those who eat better, exercise more, drink less, and visit their doctor regularly, compared to non-drinkers who are fatter, less educated, have more diabetes, and less coverage on their health insurance. All of those factors need to be accounted for before alcohol gets the credit. Winston Churchill once reportedly said, "The only statistics you can trust are the ones you have falsified yourself." There's an element of truth here, since we're really told that moderate alcohol use is associated with an increased risk of breast cancer in women. Besides having a healthier body and a clearer mind, there are also spiritual advantages to be gained by avoiding alcohol. That's all from me today. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. I'll see you next time.